This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Roller derby is pushing against the gender binary. The fast-skating, hard-hitting sport has most recently been associated with fishnets, bruises, and punk rock. But women's roller derby has also created an open community for those often left out of sports because of their body type and gender identity. Today's roller derby has its roots in a marathon skating sport developed over a century ago. Women's roller derby is an international phenomenon these days, with more than 400 leagues spread out over six counties, I should say continents. 12 of those leagues will be traveling to Winston-Salem this weekend for the 2019 Women's Flat Track Derby Association playoffs. Suzanne Becker has explored the history of roller derby and the way it's transforming traditional definitions of sport and gender. She's a lecturer in gender and sociology at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and she joins us now. Suzanne, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Listen, for those who have never seen it, and more importantly for those who have and can't quite figure out what's going on, could you explain roller derby and kind of tell us how it works?
Sure. Well, derby is a fast-paced contact sport. When you first see it, or if you go to a bout, which is what we call roller derby matches, you'll see what look like two sort of close groups of women set up on an oval track. Derby, the bouts are about 60 minutes long. You have them divided into two periods with a little break in between, and your main action is made up of these short periods that we call jams, and jams last about 2 minutes, and they look like these really short races where you've got folks from the two teams trying to score points. And so basically you'll see five skaters on a track, and they're skating on an oval track counterclockwise, and the goal is for what we call the jammer, the lead point scorer, to make it through the pack. And once they make it through the pack, and every time after that they pass another skater on the opposing team, they score a point. And I think when you first walk into roller derby, you know, until you kind of sort out what's happening on the track, it just looks like a group of folks moving around together. But it's quite fast-paced. It's quite athletic. It's quite colorful. And I think you know, certainly described what it looked like sort of at its more recent inception. You know, when derby first happened, it was described as this sort of punk rock meets pinup on skates, and that's sort of true, but it's really a lot more than that, and has evolved quite a bit since then.
It's very athletic. And now, if you think about it, okay, I've got one player from each team, one skater on each team trying to get through. That means the other skaters are playing both defense and offense at the same time, right? I mean, on the one hand, they're trying to keep that skater from passing them, but they would also like to get the other defenders out of the way so that their skater can get through and score points. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you've got your blockers and your pivots are sort of the folks that set the pace, and they make it possible for that jammer, right, to get through the pack and maneuver all around the track.
And these days it's played mostly on a flat track. Old guys like me remember watching it on TV in the 70s on a pitch track, right? But things have changed a little bit, so that most of the play, would you say today, most of the skating is done on flat tracks?
It is. There are still bank tracks, which is what you're talking about, mm-hmm. but the recent incarnation, which really started up in the early 2000s, is played primarily on the flat track. And the flat track just, you know, makes it, lends itself to sort of the do-it-yourself grassroots evolution of this latest incarnation. If you have a flat track, really, you can set that up anywhere. Whether it's in a park or a convention center or, you know, a small arena, or in, you know, the case of, I saw a match in an airport hangar once. So it makes it much easier for the teams to emerge and to really get derby going in any place.
Well, we've talked about the iterations, 70s and now, and the changes that have taken place, but this sport really goes back to the late 1800s, right?
It does. It does. Derby, a little bit different than what we know it now, really in the late 1800s started as sort of a marathon sport. And really by about 1935, it became what we call the transcontinental roller derby. And it was a type of sports entertainment based on pairs of skaters usually a man and woman doing laps around an oval track. And it was, you know, really came out of this sort of dance marathon craze, and it became more about endurance. And what we saw were skaters taking turns, pairs of skaters skating about 57,000 laps, or what would be the equivalent of about 4,000 miles at that point, which was the distance between New York and San Diego. So it was really about endurance.
And again, just this is part of that marathon. So there are dance marathons. They shoot horses, don't they, et cetera. So skating gets involved. But also significantly, and again, we're talking about late 1800s now through the 30s. This is more or less the way it kind of looked. And it was men and women together skating, right? Because they were teams, dance teams,
right. You had pairs. But what would happen even during these long marathon or sort of distance events is you would have what they called jams back then, which were the skaters would break out into like 60-second little races and try to, you know, jostle and vie for better placement on the track. And this is really where they noticed fans going crazy, right? When folks would try to pass each other on the track. And so shortly after that, 1937-38, sort of the incarnation of the derby that we're familiar with from the 1940s and 50s and 60s and even 70s, that came out of that era. It became more contact. It moved from pairs to teams. It became really an instant hit in this success. And even in the 50s and 60s, Derby was so popular in the U.S. that most major networks covered it several times a week.
And was it a sport? Was it a segregated sport by gender, men and women, or were they still playing together as they were skating together in the 1800s?
You had leagues that encompassed men and women, and sometimes skated together on the teams. But really, you know, once Derby became televised, it kind of gave rise to the advent of the sole focus on the women's leagues that were involved.
This is an interesting opportunity for women. If you think about women in sports, you know, we know that there's been, we expect to see women in tennis and in golf, and then there's the Women's mm-hmm. Basketball Association. But in these sports where there's so much physical contact, it is surprising, is it not, that we associate that this became a women's sport and not a men's sport first, where maybe we let the ladies play. This was a women's sport, and it's a high contact sport.
Absolutely. Contact sports are really one of the last places we don't see women breaking into sport. And Derby has always been a place where women could be in sport. And that's, you know, one of the unique things about roller derby then and particularly now, where we see generally the traditional institution of sports is, you know, built around our ideas of gender, and with men being more competitive and aggressive, and really in contact sports, you know, women have been sort of locked out of that arena for, forever at this point.
Yeah, well, except for roller derby,
right.
And it did get popular. It kind of fell out of the public consciousness sort of later part of the 20th century, and then revived. Talk about that slump and the revival.
Sure, it did. It really waned in the late 70s, and there was a brief flare up again in the 80s and in the early 90s, and then sort of waned again, and then very early in 2000-2001, we sort of saw the seeds of it resurfacing in Austin. And it resurfaced. The sport sort of maintains its traditional structure, but what we saw it come around in more of a grassroots way with, I guess, what you might want to call a feminist bent, and that the leagues sort of were all women at that point, and they sort of had an organic origins to them. If you remember, at this point, there's really nothing to draw on other than these old images of roller derby. So we saw women really creating a sport from the ground up. And those little seeds were planted in Austin, where it became big. And eventually there were a couple of leagues that developed, but they separated around 2002, 2003. And one of the teams moved forward as a flat track team. And oddly, simultaneously in other cities around 2003, these little seeds of derby were happening. And really what began as a grassroots effort by just a handful of women to define and organize this women's sports quickly became a national and now international phenomenon. And what you saw kind of simultaneously popping up around 2004, 2005 were teams in cities like Austin and LA and Phoenix and Brooklyn and Seattle, and of course Raleigh had one of the earliest teams.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, this was a team that was a high contact sport that was open to women, that made it unique for most of its history. And then, as you say, in the 2000s, it takes on this DIY, but also a kind of an intentionally feminist bent. And so now the question is a debate around trans athletes. When did that conversation start in roller derby?
That conversation started really early on. As a sport, you know, derby has always pushed these boundaries that we have around sport. Our sports are generally built around these, like I said before, these binaries and these ideas about what masculinity and femininity are. They're, you know, largely a cultural arena that maintain these ideas about gender, and sport reinforces those, and derby has come about and you know, really pushes back against some of those ideas about what female athletes look like and who can play sports. And you know, derby has made space for, you know, different types of bodies and differing ability levels, and there's an age range that you don't generally see in professional sports, that, you know, ranges from folks in their early 20s into their late 40s. And so sport has had these boundaries around acceptable sexuality and gender expression and gender identity and what, you know, femininity means. And it's really been a sanctioned space for women to participate in these very physical, you know, high contact sports.
Well, I want to talk more about these evolving boundaries. Erica Vanstone is executive director of the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, or the WFTDA, and that organization is the international governing body of women's roller derby. Erica, welcome to the State of Things.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What is the WFTDA policy now when it comes to trans or gender nonconforming skaters?
Yeah, what's really interesting is that since Suzanne sort of became involved in the sport in the early days, in the resurgence in the early 2000s, we've really been working pretty hard to redefine what feminism actually means. And so I think in the early days, reclaiming that resistance space, as Suzanne mentions in her dissertation, and trying to make that as intersectional and inclusive as we can. And that has been an ongoing process for us, and it's, you know, met with a lot of failure at times. We had an early gender policy that allowed transgender women to compete in the organization so long as their hormone levels were medically, quote-unquote, medically acceptable, and that was a policy that was released in around 2011, and I became a part of roller derby in a local league here in Philadelphia that, when the policy came out, really reacted very strongly against it and said, this is not inclusive enough. So since that time, the WFTDA has been working really hard to make the policy as inclusive as it possibly can be. And in 2016, we realized that the medical requirements were really prohibitive to being inclusive, and we rely on individuals to self-identify.
Now, that's interesting, because I can imagine that the pushback would be, I mean, I'm thinking about some of the arguments that we had to endure during the HB2 debate here, was that, you know, sort of men would then cis men would barge into the game, the sport, and, you know, sort of claim that they were women, and now, because of your rules, they're all playing together. Was that a concern at the time, and how have you managed it?
I believe early on it was probably a concern for the, you know, the founders of the WFTDA when they initially conceived of women's roller derby as this space for, you know, safe contact sports amongst women, as it were. But we have, through a process of really working at it, trying to figure out what constitutes inclusivity. And I think we worked really hard to create a community that is supportive of one another. And so when if you're asking, you know, well, what's the difference? How are you, quote unquote, keeping folks out? Well, we're really not. We're looking to create a culture that is inclusive and supportive. and that encourages participation at the levels that folks feel that they're available. And that's the key, is that we really rely on our community to work with us in the process of being inclusive. So it's not necessarily a top-down conversation. It's really a community process.
And you've had some of those conversations with leagues that have pushed back against your more open rules, right?
And we continue to. And I think that is it's funny, because I was just watching an interview this morning with the Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, where he was talking about how the NFL needs to stay away from politics. I think the WFTDA and roller derby were really very much the opposite, because we recognize that the early roots for the sport have been inclusive for women, and we want that for everyone. So we worked really hard to address, you know, gender issues at a league level. We do have more than 460 member organizations around the world, as you mentioned, on six continents. And every one of those countries on those continents might have different municipal laws or questions around gender that we don't necessarily always have to deal with in the United States. And of course, in the U.S., we not only have federal law to tackle, we have local and state laws to tackle as well, such as those that we are actively working on with Greensboro and in North Carolina.
Well, let's talk more about Greensboro, because that tournament is happening up in the Triad. Kelsey Hausler is a skater for Greensboro Roller Derby. She's also president of the league, which is hosting one of the 2019 WFTDA playoffs this weekend in Winston-Salem. Kelsey is known on the track as John Zena and joins us from our studios in Greensboro. Hello, Kelsey.
Hey, and thank you, Frank.
Tell us more about Greensboro Roller Derby. Tell us about the team.
Hey, so, well, we're a team that's been around since 2010, and we're just so excited for the playoffs that we're hosting this weekend, especially in spite of HB2 and all the bad rep that it's given all of NC. The community that we have, the LGBTQIA community, is here, and it's thriving, and it feels good to be represented, especially from the WFTDA and all of the policies that they've been making.
Well, it sounds like roller derby is going to be a model for us all going forward in terms of inclusivity. We need to look to roller derby.
Right, we hope it changes the world.
Well, talk about Greensboro. What's the reception for roller derby in Greensboro? How do you do up there?
We do good. We have a strong fan base that continues to come, and we continue to try and support them. And working with the community in Greensboro, we try to do more of that every year. So we're a nonprofit, and we work with other nonprofits partnering throughout the year and thoughtfully pick them. And it just feels so good to give back and to feel them giving back to us and supporting our sport and all that we're doing.
Well, and talking about that community, I know Greensboro Roller Derby has evolved quite a bit when it comes to gender in the league, and particularly when it comes to your annual mixer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we had Winston's team hosted a open mixer that had a girls and guys moniker, and it had been around for 9 years as of this year. So when they joined Greensboro, we continued it over. And 2019, we changed the name to drop the girls and guys moniker, because it's always been an open sport and an open mixer for everyone, for all genders. And we'd lay out the team based on WFTDA insured and other appropriately insured teams, so everyone could play and feel inclusive and just really meet the other athletes in the team and support each other in their journeys in the other leagues.
Kelsey Hausler is president and skater for Greensboro Roller Derby. Suzanne Becker is a lecturer in gender sociology, professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Erica Vanstone is executive director of the Women's Flat Track Derby Association. I want to thank all of you for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
This weekend, one of the 2019 International Women's Flat Track Derby Association playoffs, ticketed event in Winston-Salem Fairgrounds. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just had a new art exhibit honors women fighting for voting rights. We'll talk about that in a moment. Stay tuned.